Elmer Brandon's morning routine never varied. As always, he was Kathleen York's first customer of the day. His breakfast this morning was the same as it was every morning. One hard-boiled egg, one strip of bacon, one biscuit with butter and jam, and coffee.
Mr. Brandon, I read the editorial in your extra edition. I thought it was very good.
Well, thank you, Mary Lou. It's nice of you to say.
Kathleen came over to Brandon's table and poured a second cup of coffee for him.
What are you having for lunch?
I've got a good vegetable soup on. But lunch is going to be an hour earlier today. I intend to close the restaurant so I can watch the trial.
Oh, good idea. And since I'm going to be one of Mr. Murchison's witnesses, I need to eat an early lunch anyway.
Just as Brandon finished his second cup of coffee, he saw Smoke, Sally, Cal, and Murchison coming in for breakfast. He stopped by their table on his way out.
Mr. Brandon, I read your article. It was a great piece. No doubt it'll be the talk of the town today.
Oh, I've no doubt it'll be the talk of the town. But there are a lot of people who aren't going to be all that pleased with it.
Anyone with a sense of justice and fair play will like it. The truth is, Mr. Brandon, I believe your article may just guarantee us an impartial jury and a fair trial.
I hope so. And I know that I'm looking forward to being a witness for you. Do we need to talk about it before I testify?
That won't be necessary. As I understand it, your testimony is going to tell how the trouble began, but you have no knowledge of the actual shooting. Is that right?
That's right.
That will be a big help. Court convenes at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Just make certain you are there in time.
I'll be there bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Saying goodbye to the others in the restaurant, Brandon stepped outside. He was feeling particularly good about himself today. He had gotten into the newspaper business to do good, but somewhere along the line it'd become much easier to just go along without making any waves.
Emma, I hope you're looking down on me now, and I hope I've made you proud.
Emma, his wife of 19 years, had died 2 years earlier. As was his daily custom, Brandon stopped in the vet's office for a moment or two before going back to the print shop, where he not only published the newspaper, but did custom printing. Doc Patterson was looking at a small dog.
What's wrong with the puppy?
Nothing, really. Mrs. Peabody thought maybe it had the mange, but he just had a flea bite, and the dog scraped away some of its fur getting to it.
Did you read my extra?
Yeah, I read it. Is that the only reason you stopped by this morning, to get my comment on your article?
Yeah, it is. Every other morning, I just stop by to make a pest of myself. But this morning, I stopped by because I wanted to see what you thought of my editorial.
Well, you do make a pest of yourself most of the time. But to answer your question, I thought your editorial was brilliant, but...
But what?
Aren't you taking a big risk? We both know what kind of person Quentin is.
Sir, I will have you know that I am a member of the most noble, honest, and trustworthy profession in America. I am a newspaper man, and I will not let someone like Pogue Quentin frighten me away from doing my duty.
You are to be praised, sir. It was a good article, Elma. Perhaps the best I have ever seen you write. But I am afraid it is all for nothing.
All for nothing? Why do you say that?
Because you are not going to get enough men with the courage and honor who will serve fairly on the jury.
What about you, Doc?
What about me?
You are one of the most likely to be selected for jury duty. Will you serve honorably?
I very much hope that I am not selected for jury duty.
That's not an answer, Doc. The question is, if you are selected, will you serve honorably?
Like I said, I very much hope that I am not selected for jury duty.
Doc, I am disappointed in you. I can understand your reluctance to be a witness, but not your reluctance to be a juror. If not for the fact that I'm going to be a witness, I would very much want to serve on this jury.
For crying out loud, Elma, why would anyone actually want to serve on a jury?
Civic duty, perhaps? And just to see that for once in this town, justice is done?
I guess that's reason enough.
Also, I very much would like to irritate the hell out of Pogue Quentin.
Now that, I can't believe.
I would love to stay long enough for you to continue to heap praise on me for my brilliant article, but alas, I must get to work. I have some posters to print for Milo's Emporium. I need to get them out of the way so I can go to the trial this afternoon to give testimony. Are you going to be there?
We've already been through all this, Elma. I'm not going to be a witness.
I'm not talking about you being a witness. I'm just talking about you being there to give me some moral support.
Moral support? Yes, moral support I can do. I'll be there.
I'll see you then.
With a final wave to his friend, Brandon walked on down the street another block and a half until he reached the newspaper office. Unlocking the doors, he stepped inside, shut the door, and walked over to open the curtains.
Leave them closed.
Who's there? Who are you? What do you want?
He saw something move deep within the shadows. Whoever it was, he was very short. So short that Brandon thought it might be a young boy.
What are you doing in my office, boy? Does your mama know you're here? Get out. Get on home with you.
The figure stepped out of the shadows. He was small, but he was no boy. He was dressed all in black and was wearing a pistol belt that bristled with filled bullet loops. He wore a mustache, and even though his eyes were as dark as coal, they somehow seemed to catch the ambient light so that they were shining in the darkness. Brandon had seen this person only once before in his life, but he recognized him immediately.
Cates! You're the one they call Snake Cates!
Mr. Quentin is very upset with you. He has sent me to let you know just how upset he is. He wants you to put out another edition.
Another edition?
He wants you to tell the people of Santa Clara that you have been thinking about what you wrote earlier, and now you have changed your mind. He wants you to apologize in print.
I couldn't do anything like that. Why, I would be discredited for the rest of my life. I may as well not be a newspaper man anymore.
That's the other thing. After you apologize, he wants you to leave town forever.
No, I can't do that. My Emma is buried in this cemetery. I intend to lie alongside her.
If you don't agree to Mr. Quentin's terms, you will be lying alongside her sooner than you thought.
You tell Quentin I said to go to hell. Oh!
Doc Patterson was making an entry in his ledger about the puppy he had just examined when he heard the gunshot. Gunshots were not all that unusual in Santa Clara. Sometimes someone would get a little drunk, then shoot his gun out in the street. But it was too early in the day for that kind of gunshot. He ran down to Brandon's office. Doc went inside and looked around, but because the drapes were pulled shut, it was too dark to see. By now, a few others had come in as well.
Open the curtains.
When the curtains were drawn, the morning sun spilled in through the windows, lighting up the room. That was when Doc saw Brandon lying face down on the floor.
Elmer!
Kneeling beside him, he put his hand on Brandon's neck to check for a pulse. There was none. As he was kneeling over the body, Marshal Dawson walked into the room.
What the hell happened?
Brandon's been shot. He's dead.
Maybe it was a suicide or an accident or something.
Do you see a pistol anywhere, Marshal?
No.
Then that should prove that it was no suicide or accident. He was murdered.
Well, if he was, it was his own fault.
What? His own fault? How can you say something like that?
Come on, Doc. You read his article, I'm sure.
I'll be damned. You're right. I think Quentin killed him, but I never thought I'd hear you say that.
What? Who said anything about Quentin killing him?
You did. You said it was because of his article.
I didn't say nothing about Quentin doing the killing. There's no doubt in my mind but that article made a lot of people in this town very mad. More than likely, it was one of them. I just don't know who.
I don't see how it could make anyone but Quentin mad.
Are you accusing Quentin?
Yes.
Then you're a fool. I was out at the Tumbling Q this morning, and Quentin was there. He probably has 20 witnesses who'll say he was there all morning. Quentin didn't do it.
If Quentin didn't do it, then who did?
I told you, I don't know who did it. I just know who didn't do it. But don't worry, I'll find out.
Yeah, I'm sure you will.
When Doc stepped into Kathleen's kitchen a few minutes later, he saw Pearlie's friends having breakfast and talking animatedly about the special edition of the newspaper.
It is an exceptionally well-written piece. I just hope the good people of Santa Clara realize what a talented journalist they have in Mr. Brandon.
Hello, Doc. Come join us. We're talking about the newspaper article your friend wrote.
Elmer is dead.
Who is dead?
Elmer Brandon.
You mean the newspaper editor?
Yes.
He just left here no more than half an hour ago.
I know. He left here, then he stopped at my office for a few minutes, the way he does every morning. Then he walked on down to his office. Someone must have been waiting for him there, because no more than 2 minutes after he left me, he was dead.
I guess he was more courageous than we thought.
Mr. Murchison, Elmer was going to testify for you, wasn't he?
Yes, sir. Yes, he was.
Well, now, I'm going to.
I appreciate that, Dr. Patterson. I truly do.
Because the New York Saloon was the only building large enough to hold the number of people expected to attend the trial, the hearing would be held there. Gibson had been told that no liquor could be sold during the time of the trial, but the trial generated enough early business to compensate him for it, so he willingly closed the bar at 12:30. More than half the population of the town made plans to attend the trial. This included several women and the parson of the local church, none of whom had ever seen the inside of the saloon before. Earlier today, out of deference to the ladies who would be attending the trial, Gibson hung a white silk cloth over the nude painting. Note from Cupid. Smoke, Sally, Cal, Lenny, Mary Lou, and Kathleen were sitting in the front row, immediately behind the defense table. They had arrived early so that they were there when Pearlie was brought into the improvised courtroom, his hands shackled behind him. Deputy Wilson was the escorting officer, and he strutted importantly alongside Pearlie, guiding him by way of his hand gripping Pearlie's elbow.
Hello, Smoke, Miss Sally, Cal. Hi, Lenny, Miss York, Miss Culpepper.
They all nodded at him.
Don't you worry none, Pearlie. Everything's gonna be just fine. Mr. Murchison is the smartest lawyer I know.
Cal, that would give me a lot of comfort if I thought you knew a lot of lawyers.
Now you sit there, and you don't get me in trouble.
Wilson unlocked the shackle.
I'm gonna be sitting right over there, and I'll be keeping my eye on you for the whole time.
Curious as to why the conversation had suddenly stilled, Smoke turned in his chair and looked back toward the front door. There, standing just inside the bat wings, he saw a Pogue Quentin accompanied by a small, evil-looking man.
Smoke, that fellow with Quentin, that's...
Borgata's Cates.
Yeah, they call him Snake Cates. He's one of the deadliest killers in the country.
I wonder what he's doing here.
I'm sure Quentin hired him.
Smoke, do you think he is the one who killed Mr. Brandon?
I would bet on it.
You have to know that Marshal Dawson would suspect that. Yet here he is, just as bold as life.
The mistake you're making, Sally, isn't thinking that Dawson is a real law officer. He isn't. He's Quentin's man.
Quentin and Cates walked to the front of the room. There were no empty seats in the front row, but when Quentin glared at two men who were sitting there, they got up quickly and went to the back of the room, thus enabling Quentin and Cates to sit behind the prosecutor's table. Murchison had already met the prosecutor, having talked with him for a few minutes about half an hour ago. Santa Clara did not have a full-time prosecuting attorney, nor did Huronno County. It was normally the responsibility of the presiding judge to appoint one, but in this case, he didn't have to. When Marshal Dawson and Percy Gilmore met the judge at the depot last night with the request that Gilmore be assigned the position of prosecutor, it had surprised Judge McCabe. Appointing someone who actually wanted to be the prosecutor was a rare break from the routine. Most of the time, Judge McCabe would encounter resistance from those he appointed as prosecutor, so he welcomed this turn of events and appointed Gilmore to the position even before he left the depot.
Oyez, oyez, oyez. This here court of Huronno County, Santa Clara, Colorado is now in session. Everyone will come to order. The Honorable Judge Cletus McCabe presiding. All rise.
Judge McCabe was a rather large man with cheeky jowls, piercing blue eyes, and a bald head. He ambled to the bench, then sat down.
Be seated. Comes now before this court in the case of the people versus Pearlie. Pearlie what?
Just Pearlie, Your Honor.
No, that won't do. I'm gonna need your entire name.
Please the court, Your Honor. As the person named in the indictment is identified only as Pearlie, and as my defendant readily agrees that he is the Pearlie so named, there is no legal requirement that any other name be used. I'm sure Your Honor is aware there have been cases tried and adjudicated for persons known only as John Doe.
Do you hereby state before this court that you are the person identified in this indictment as Pearlie?
I do, Your Honor.
Then Pearlie it shall be. In the case of the people versus Pearlie, the charge is murder. And murder in the first degree. Murder in the first degree? Are you sure you wouldn't like to amend this charge? I was under the impression that it was a spur-of-the-moment killing. Murder in the first degree requires premeditation. That's going to be a hard case to make, don't you think?
First degree, Judge. I want this son of a bitch to hang.
Any more outbursts like that, Mr. Quentin, and I will have you escorted from this court. Do you understand?
Quentin glared at the judge but said nothing.
Do you understand, sir?
Yeah, I understand.
Mr. Prosecutor, do you wish to amend the charge?
No, Your Honor. There is no set time limit for premeditation. It can be as little as a second.
Very well. The charge shall be prosecuted as entered. With lawyer for the defense present, and with the prosecutor present, we shall proceed with voir dire of the impaneled jury.
The first juror questioned by Murchison was James Colby.
Mr. Colby, what is your occupation?
I'm a rancher. Sort of.
Sort of?
Well, I'm still running Longhorns when everyone else is switching to Herefords. It's getting harder to hang on.
Do you know Billy Ray Quentin?
Yeah, I knew him.
How well did you know him?
In a town this size, and with someone like Billy Ray, almost everyone knew him.
What do you mean, someone like Billy Ray?
Well, he was the son of the wealthiest man in the county, and he could be quite unpleasant. Like I said, everyone knew him.
Do you have any financial obligation or business relationships with Pogue Quinton?
No.
Do you think you could render an honest verdict based entirely upon the evidence presented in this case?
I do.
The defense accepts the jury, Your Honor.
Voir dire, Mr. Prosecutor!
Mr. Colbert, you said that Billy Ray could be unpleasant. What did you mean by that?
You knew him as well as I did, Percy. Why would you even have to ask such a thing?
Did you like Billy Ray?
I don't know if anyone liked him. But that doesn't mean I can't be fair.
I see. Let's change directions. Mr. Colby, were you present at a meeting in Poe Quinton's home several months ago when several ranchers from the area made the decision to pool their livestock and property into one larger cooperative ranch?
Well, you know I was. You were there, too.
Yes, I was. And I know the answer to this question as well, but I want you to answer it for the sake of the court. Did you join with the others?
No, I did not.
Why didn't you join, Mr. Colby?
Because I thought he was just setting everything up so as to cheat us out of our land. And it turns out I was right. Gillespie, Peters, Baker, and the others, they're all gone now. Gone without so much as one cow or one acre to their name. Quinton owns it all.
Do you find fault with Mr. Quinton for that?
Beg your pardon?
Do you blame Mr. Quinton for the fact that these other gentlemen you mentioned lost their property?
You're damn right I do. He stole that land from them as sure as if he'd done it with a gun.
Your Honor, dismiss for cause. It is clear that there is some animosity between this juror and the father of the victim.
You may step down, Mr. Colby. You are dismissed from this jury.
Gilmore dismissed two more of the potential jurors, both of whom had had run-ins with Billy Ray, and Murchison dismissed two of the jurors who were currently cowboys working for the Tumbling Q. They finally ended up with a panel of 12.
Those jurors who have been dismissed may stay as spectators, but you are to have no contact with the remaining jurors. Mr. Prosecutor, you may give your opening statement now. Make your case.
Now, fellas, in a few minutes, that man sitting behind the table over there...
Gilmore pointed to Murchison.
The counsel for the defense is going to give you his opening statement. No doubt he is going to begin by addressing you as gentleman of the jury. He has to do that, you understand, because he doesn't know you. He is a stranger to our town, and it will be a stranger who addresses you.
Gilmore pointed to Pearlie.
A few days ago, the defendant was also a stranger to our town. None of us had ever heard of him. But he is certainly not a stranger anymore. By now, everyone in town knows him and knows the evil deed he did. You see, 9 days ago, the defendant, this spawn of Cain, came to town, had a few drinks, got into a card game, and became so enraged over what was happening in that game that he murdered Billy Ray Quinton. I knew Billy Ray. All of you knew Billy Ray. In fact, I would go so far as to say that everyone in town either knew him or knew of him. We knew him because he was the son of Mr. Pogue Quinton, who is arguably the wealthiest man and the leading citizen of our fair city. More importantly, my fellow citizens of Santa Clara, we knew him because Billy Ray was one of us. He was full of life. And I dare say that at one time or another, his antics gave all of you something to laugh about, either with him or at him. Oh, don't misunderstand. I know Billy Ray wasn't always a hail fellow well-met type person. I would be the first to admit that Billy Ray could be a bit of a rascal on occasion. He liked to drink. And when he was drunk, he could sometimes be somewhat overly rambunctious. And just as all of us laughed at and with him from time to time, I'm sure that all of us became angry with him just as often. But none of us ever got so angry at Billy Ray that we killed him. No, sir, that bit of malevolence was left to be perpetrated by a stranger. This man, who would admit only to the name of Pearlie, came into our town and took one of our own from us. Today, each one of you has been called upon to perform a solemn task. You are being asked to decide the fate of another human being. The decision you make here could mean that this man will be required to forfeit his life, and no decision you will ever make in your life will be graver or more awesome than this. But when you render your decision, I want you to consider something. You are not doing it alone. This murderer will have a lawyer to plead for him. This murderer will have a jury to hear and weigh all the facts. And this murderer will have his sentence imposed by a judge, duly recognized by the state of Colorado. Compare this to the rash decision Pearlie made in the blink of an eye, which was all the time left to Billy Ray Quentin after the defendant decided to kill him. After you hear this case, I am sure that you will bring in a verdict of guilty, and we will have justice when the town gathers around the gallows on Front Street to watch this murderer be hanged by the neck until he is dead.
Murchison sat at his table for a long moment until, finally, the judge called upon him.
Counselor for the defense, do you waive your opening remarks?
No, Your Honor. I will speak to the jury.
Murchison turned to the jury.
Mr. Gilmore was correct in saying that I would begin my remarks by addressing you as gentlemen of the jury. I do so with the highest respect for those of you who have been called upon to, as the prosecutor was also correct in saying, make the most awesome and the gravest decision of your lives. He was wrong, however, in saying that you would be addressed by a stranger. On the contrary, you are going to be addressed by someone you all knew, respected, and, I think I'm safe in saying, someone you could call your friend. I will be mouthing the words, but the words will not be mine. The words will be those of Elmer Brandon, as he wrote them in his extra edition of the Santa Clara Chronicle, which he published last night. Tragically, they are the last words he ever wrote, because as I'm sure most, if not all of you know, this talented and courageous newspaper editor was murdered this morning. I have no doubt but that he was murdered because he had the courage and the sense of obligation to write these very words I'm about to read to you.
Murchison picked up the extra broadsheet and began to read it.
For the first time in this newspaper's history, the Chronicle has issued an extra edition to inform the citizens of Santa Clara of a true and unique opportunity. Tomorrow, the 17th of September, a young man, a visitor to our community, who we know only as Pearlie, will be put on trial for his life. The opportunity that trial offers the citizens of Santa Clara is the prospect of resurrecting something that beats deep within the breast of all Americans, something which sets our nation apart from the nations of Europe and the rest of the world, something that many in this town abandoned long ago upon the altar of economic security. That something is democracy. Though no one has yet spoken the words aloud, it is no secret to anyone that this town has for many years now been in the clutches of a true despot. That despot is Poe Quentin, who by skillful and perfidious, if not illegal, manipulation has managed to gain control of nearly all the ranch land surrounding our fair city. He has used that same means to acquire many of the businesses in town so that by now a majority of our citizens are dependent upon him for their very existence. We may owe Poe Quentin our livelihoods, but we do not owe him our souls. And by the words here written, your humble scribe is calling upon all to reclaim those souls so nearly lost. How can you do that? By making certain that the inalienable rights of trial by a jury and innocent until proven guilty are accorded the young man who now stands in peril of his life due to the trial upcoming. Recently, Poe Quentin's son, Billy Ray, was killed in a shooting that occurred at the New York Saloon. Though some off-the-record testimony says that the shooting was justifiable, we, the citizens of Santa Clara, have for the last week had to suffer the unpleasant sight of a terrible instrument of death, a gallows constructed in the middle of Front Street. This gallows was constructed not by the city or the county or the state. It was a private construction paid for by Poe Quentin. It was constructed to facilitate the execution by hanging of a young man who has not yet had his day in court. I can also reliably report, having attended the cemetery interment of Billy Ray Quinton and been a witness to the outrageous actions of Poe Quinton, that he interrupted the sacred burial rites to demand, under penalty of economic pressure, that any citizen who may be called upon for jury duty find Pearlie guilty. He makes this demand before the first piece of evidence is presented, before the first witness is heard, before the opening arguments are made. I say no, 1,000 times no to this demand. I say to all our citizens, and especially to whoever may be selected to serve upon this jury, that you remember your obligation to uphold the principles upon which our nation was founded, the rights for which, in the recent Civil War, so many brave young men, in the words of Abraham Lincoln, gave their last full measure of devotion. Whether this young visitor to our town is found guilty or innocent, let it be by a fair trial, decided upon by men of honor and character. It is time for us to reclaim our rights, to lay possession to the civil liberties that are granted to all men by the grace of a just and merciful God, and preserved by the noble efforts of men. Let us walk the streets of Santa Clara with our heads held high and proclaim to one and all that we are Americans.
I will not allow another demonstration like this.
Murchison noticed as he sat down, however, that the judge's words, though chastising, were not harsh. It was as if he understood the natural outpouring of emotion the citizens of the town had at hearing the last words ever written by the editor of the newspaper. Gilmore had 3 witnesses for the prosecution, all of whom worked for Pogue Quentin, and all of whom claimed that Pearlie started the fight by hitting Billy Ray over the head. Jerry Kelly claimed that when Billy Ray came in through the door carrying the shotgun, Pearlie shot at him first. Murchison countered with 6 witnesses. Doc Patterson testified that it was Billy Ray who got angry first and drew his gun on Pearlie.
Pearlie could have shot him right then if he had wanted to, but instead of shooting him, he hit him over the head and took away his pistol.
Decker substantiated Doc's account, then went on to say that Billy Ray had charged back into the saloon brandishing a shotgun.
Billy Ray saw Pearlie standing at the bar, and he just opened up on him without so much as a by-year leave. I swear to you, I don't know how Pearlie managed to escape getting killed.
The testimonies of Evans, Lenny, and Mary Lou concurred with Deckard's account. All said that Pearlie did not shoot back until it was obvious that Billy Ray was about to shoot the other barrel.
And he wouldn't have missed this time.
Gilmore's questioning of Doc, Deckard, Evans, and Lenny was perfunctory. It wasn't until Mary Lou took the stand that his questions became more intense.
Miss Culpepper, do you expect the court to believe that you were in the saloon at the time of the shooting?
Yes, I expect the court to believe I was there because I was.
But you are a woman, Miss Culpepper. What on earth would you be doing in the saloon? The New York saloon is not a place normally habituated by women, is it?
I was working in the saloon. I was serving drinks.
You were serving drinks?
Yes, sir.
What else do you do?
I don't understand.
Oh, I'm sure you do understand.
No, I don't.
Isn't it true, Miss Culpepper, that you are a whore?
Objection, Your Honor. The question is irrelevant.
Your Honor, goes to character. If this woman is a whore, then her entire character can be questioned. For example, can she be trusted to tell the truth?
Witness will answer the question.
Are you a whore?
Am I a whore?
That's my question.
No.
You are under oath, Miss Culpepper. Now, I will ask you again. Are you a whore?
No.
Miss Culpepper.
Objection, Your Honor. Question was asked and answered.
Sustained. Get on with your cross-examination, Counselor.
Miss Culpepper, there is a scar on your nose, and though it has nearly cleared up, it is obvious that both of your eyes were recently blackened. How did you get those injuries?
Billy Ray hit me.
Why did he hit you? Your Honor, please instruct the witness to respond.
Answer the question, Miss Culpepper.
He hit me because I wouldn't go upstairs with him.
Did he have a reasonable expectation that you would go upstairs with him? My question is, did you sometimes go upstairs with others?
Sometimes I went upstairs with others.
So you are a whore?
No, I'm not a whore.
Objection, Your Honor. Your ruling has already closed this line of questioning.
Sustained.
You did not care much for Billy Ray Quinton, did you?
No. He was mean and brutal.
So if someone killed Billy Ray, you wouldn't mind seeing him get off, would you?
Objection, Your Honor.
Sustained.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Redirect?
Yes, Your Honor. Miss Culpepper, the prosecutor asked you several times if you were a whore. Now, the operative word here is are. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Have you ever been a, I think the more genteel term is, soiled dove?
I was, yes.
But no more?
No more.
What do you do now?
I work for Mrs. York.
Thank you. No further questions, Your Honor.
Closing arguments were short. Murchison pointed out that Doc Patterson and Deckard concurred in their testimony as to how the fight started, with Billy Ray attempting to draw his gun on Pearlie. He also reminded the jury that Deckard, Evans, Lenny, and Mary Lou gave nearly identical accounts as to how Billy Ray came bursting back into the saloon firing his shotgun without warning.
The burden of proof is with the prosecution. That means that normally the guiding principle in a trial like this is that you cannot find a defendant guilty unless you are convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that he is guilty, and in his charge to the jury, the judge will no doubt so instruct you. But in this case, I believe that even if that standard were reversed, if the burden of proof beyond a shadow of a doubt was with the defense, you would still have no recourse but to find Pearlie innocent of this charge.
In his closing remarks, Gilmore again reminded the jury that Pearlie was a stranger, an itinerant wanderer who came into town and while there, for no reason other than his own innate evil, gunned down a local man.
Billy Ray walked and talked with us. He laughed with us. He participated in the town celebration of the 4th of July with us. He played cards with us. That in itself is enough to require that we demand justice be meted out to his murderer. But Billy Ray wasn't just any local man. He was the son of the leading citizen of our town, a man to whom more than half of our citizens are beholden for their livelihood. And now Billy Ray's bones lie in the cemetery at the edge of town. Listen. Listen closely. Because if you do, you can hear the very wind, the very cry of the mournful soul of one of us, our friend, our brother, calling to us from his grave, demanding that we give him justice.
The jury had only been out 14 minutes when they came tramping back into the saloon-turned-courtroom and took their seats.
Have you selected a foreman?
We have, Your Honor. My name is Greg Paul.
Mr. Paul, have the jury reached a verdict?
We have.
Would you publish the verdict, please?
We find the defendant, Pearlie, not guilty.
No! You son of a bitch, you'll pay for this!
Marshal Donson, escort that man out of this courtroom!
Come on, Pogue, let's get out of here.
Pogue glared a moment longer toward Pearlie and the others. Then he, Marshal Dawson, and Snake Cates left the saloon. The townspeople gathered around Pearlie, congratulating him, and several offered to buy him a drink as soon as the bar reopened.
I just wish Mr. Brandon could have been here for this.
He was here. At least his words were. Mr. Murchison, thanks for reading them. You read the words beautifully, and he would have been very proud.
Mrs. York, Mary Lou, dear, please call me Kathleen.
Kathleen, if you don't mind, I think I would like to go over to the kitchen and make an apple pie. We can have it later in celebration.
Can you bake an apple pie? Well, that's my favorite.
Mine, too. It's a recipe my mama taught me.
Well, of course you can, dear. Do you need any help?
No, I'll be just fine.
For the next several minutes, Smoke, Sally, Pearlie, and the others engaged the townspeople in conversation. Many in the town had heard of Smoke, and they were taking this opportunity to get close to someone who was already famous.
Mr. Jensen?
Looking up, Smoke saw a big bearded man with a wandering eye.
Yes.
I'm Cole Mathers.
What do you want, Mathers? Mathers is Quentin's foreman.
I ain't his foreman anymore.
Did he fire you?
No, sir, he didn't fire me. I quit. I couldn't go along with what he's planning now.
What is he planning now?
Well, for one thing, he's got the whore.
What?
The whore. He's got her, and he says he's gonna kill her if Pearlie don't come out and face his man, Snake Cates.
I need a gun.
No, wait. We've just got you through one trial. There's no sense in getting you mixed up in another one. I'll go out.
That's what Quentin figured you'd do. Truth is, I think he wants you dead as much or more than he wants Pearlie.
Where is Mary Lou?
Deputy Wilson and a couple others are holding her down at the Quentin's freight warehouse.
Pearlie, you and Cal go down to the depot and get Mary Lou.
I'm going too.
All right, you can go as well.
My pistol's down at the jailhouse.
I've got one behind the bar you can use, Pearlie.
Mr. Gibson, I'll borrow the shotgun if you don't mind.
Hold on a minute. You men can't go out there like this.
Judge, they have the girl.
You can't go out like this until I deputize you. Raise your hands, all of you. By the power vested in me by the state of Colorado, I hereby vacate the law enforcement responsibilities of Dawson and Wilson and grant temporary deputy status to each of you.
Thanks, Judge. And here I thought you were called the hanging judge.
I will hang them if they are guilty and need hanging.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Mr. Jensen, I just thought you ought to know. If Cates doesn't kill you, Quentin and Dawson plan to do it themselves.
Thanks.
The street was empty when Smoke stepped out onto the boardwalk in front of the New York Saloon. The street was empty, but it wasn't unobserved, because word had already spread throughout the town that there was going to be a showdown between two of the fastest guns in the West. Smoke stepped out into the street and started walking toward Cates.
Is Quentin paying you for this, Cates?
Yeah. Quentin paid me to kill the newspaper man, too. Don't you be telling him now, but this killing I would have done for free.
Really? And why is that?
You got any idea how much money I'm gonna be able to charge for my services once I kill the Great Smoke Jensen?
Doesn't matter.
What do you mean it doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter because you aren't going to get off the street alive.
I wouldn't be so sure about that. You're a lot bigger target than I am.
My target will be the same size, no matter how big you are.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, Cates, that I'm gonna shoot you right between the eyes.
Suddenly, Cates went for his gun, but Smoke was ready for him.
Shoot him! Shoot the son of a bitch!
The voice came from the hayloft of the livery. Smoke fired back, shooting twice into the dark maw of the hayloft. He ran to the water trough nearest the livery and dived behind it as Quentin and Dawson fired again. Smoke left his position behind the water trough and ran toward the door of the livery. When he reached the big open double doors of the livery, he ran on through to the inside.
Where'd he go? Dawson, do you see him? Where'd the son of a bitch go?
He come through the doors. He's in here somewhere. Keep your eyes peeled.
He's inside. He's right below us.
Quentin, Cates told me you paid him to kill Elmer Brandon. That makes you as guilty of murder as he was. And I'm putting you under arrest.
Ha! You're putting someone under arrest. Maybe you forgot, Jensen, but I'm the law around here.
Not anymore, you aren't. Judge McCabe just removed you and Wilson from office and made me the law. Come to think of it, Dawson, I'm putting you under arrest, too.
You ain't arresting nobody.
Dawson, who are you talking to? Do you see him?
Nah.
With his pistol pointed up toward the loft above him, Smoke moved quietly through the barn itself, looking up at the hayloft just overhead. Suddenly, he felt little pieces of hay falling on him, and he stopped because he realized that someone had to be right over him.
Dawson! Dawson, are you hit?
Smoke realized then that he had expended every shot, so he opened the gate and started poking the empty shell casings from the cylinder chambers of his pistol.
Well now, look here.
Smoke glanced over to his left to see Quentin standing in the open on the edge of the loft. He was holding a pistol pointed at Smoke, and from this range, it would be very hard for him to miss.
You're out of bullets, aren't you, son of a bitch?
Smoke saw the expression on Quentin's face change from triumph to shock, then to pain. Quentin dropped his pistol, grabbed the hole in his chest, then pitched forward, turning over once on the way down to land on his back. Looking toward the open doors, Smoke saw Sally standing there, holding a smoking pistol.
What took you so long?
You know how we women are, Smoke. I didn't want to come outside until I knew my hair looked all right.
Oh, your hair is beautiful.
When Smoke and Sally went back out into the street, they saw Cal running toward them.
Where's Pearly?
He and Lenny are down at the freight warehouse. They have Wilson and a couple of cowboys from the Tumbling Q holed up inside with Mary Lou.
Is Mary Lou all right?
Yes, ma'am, I think she is. It's just that they say that if we try and come in after them, they'll kill her.
Let's go get her out.
When Smoke, Sally, and Cal walked down to the other end of town to the warehouse, most of the town followed until there was a crowd gathered just outside the warehouse.
Wilson!
What do you want?
Do you have Mary Lou in there?
Yeah, we got her.
Why?
What? What do you mean, why?
I mean, what good is it going to do you? Quentin is dead. Dawson is dead. Cates is dead. That leaves you boys all by yourselves. You've got two choices now. Let the girl go and live, or keep her and die.
I don't believe they're dead.
Take a look out here. Do you see all these people? You think they would be standing out here in the street if Quentin or Dawson or Cates was still alive?
Kelly, Reeves,
Jensen's telling the truth. Quentin is dead.
Cole was standing out in the street with others from the town.
Cole? What are you doing here?
Trying to talk some sense into you?
Son of a bitch, Wilson, look out there! What are we holding this girl for now? Quentin's dead? Who are we working for? I'm going out.
No, you ain't, Reeves. You're staying right here with Kelly and me.
If you stay, you'll be staying by yourself. I don't plan on getting killed for Quentin, especially when Quentin is dead his own self.
That leaves just you, Wilson. Make up your mind. You can die, or you can live.
There was a long moment of silence from inside the warehouse. Then, Mary Lou appeared in the door.
Mary Lou!
Mary Lou ran toward him and they kissed and embraced.
We're coming out now!
A moment later, all three came out, holding their hands in the air. 1 year later, Sugarloaf Ranch.
All right, Juan, hold her. Here she comes.
The heifer shuddered, then the calf popped out.
Look there! It's a male!
Sally came into the barn then and stood for a moment looking up at Smoke, Pearly, and Cal as they looked down at the new calf. Juan started cleaning it up.
What do you think, Miss Sally? This is number 21 from Prince Henry.
Look over there at Prince Henry. He knows this is his calf, and he is strutting around just as proud as a peacock.
Miss Sally, do you remember when Smoke said that all we needed from Prince Henry was for him to have an eye for the ladies?
I remember. It turns out Prince Henry isn't the only one with an eye for the ladies.
What do you mean?
Sally held up a letter.
When I was in town today, I picked up our mail. We got a letter from Lenny. He and Mary Lou have just had a baby.
Oh, wow, that's great. Who did they name it?
Elmer Brandon York. They named it after the newspaper editor.
They couldn't have chosen a better name.
Just think, Lenny with a youngin' of his own.
The calf, clean now, got up on wobbly feet, then walked over to nudge up against Cal.
Look at the way that calf is taking the cow. Looks to me like Lenny isn't the only one with a youngin' of his own. Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man number 37, Savagery of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2010, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by James Lewis, Drew Copas, Elizabeth Jernigan, Richard Rowan, Johann Detweiler, David Coyne, Bradley Smith, Nanette Savard, Christopher Graybill, M.J. Casey, Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Thomas Keegan, Kimberly Gilbert, Alexander Strain, Joe Brack, Nick DePinto, Christopher Sheeran, Dylan Lynch, and Stephen Carpenter. Directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and Smoke Jensen theme music by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Savagery of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Ranger series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio.
Graphic Audio presents Lilith St. Crow's
Jill Kismet.
Come on in and step right up, ladies and gentlemen! See the hunter come into the ring! sir. It's a sight for the ages. And tonight's show will be the one to end all shows. Hurry, hurry, find your seats.
Book 4.
Flesh Circus.
Hola, bruja. Come in. Been expecting you.
The body shot forward, hitting the edge of the cornmeal circle, going full speed. When you want to talk about it, let me know.
You never have time.
You're kidding, right, Saul?
Do I sound like I'm kidding?
Don't worry about me, Saul. I did this job before you came along. Why don't you go and find a nice tabby and raise a litter or three? God knows you're domestic enough.
Jesus, Jill! Are you insane?
Darkness pressing down as if I were the thing to be exorcised from this house. One of the zombies leapt on me, and I struggled to free myself.
What the fuck?
I think Saul left me.
Left you? Why would...
Galena, my love life can wait. If Zomba kills who she's aiming for, there's gonna be heavy-duty problems. Because on the other side of the central ring, leaning forward as if pushing into a heavy wind, stood Mama Zomba.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Cirque Diabolique. We're all new and renewed. We're pedal to the metal and shoulder to the wheel. And welcome our new hostage. Time to clip and chain him.
You have our thanks, Hunter.
Available now in graphic audio.
Wanderer, I had a bad dream. I heard a voice calling me, Wanderer. I followed it through a dark mist until I saw wooden stairs built into the side of a huge mound. I walked up the steps into this big round room.
Ah, the sun chamber at the temple mound in Cahokia. I wonder what the Cahokians want with you. Theron, the sun chief, is not a good person to be wanted by. His madness started with nightshade. Yes, nightshade.
I hate this, Badger Tail. The Sun Chief has truly gone mad this time.
Theron frightens me too, but I cannot disobey my orders, Bobcat.
Leader Badger Tail wishes to speak with the great Moon Chief.
You're a bold man, Leader Badger Tail.
The Sun Chief needs a new priestess. He wants nightshade.
She's not here.
Where is she?
We won't tell you. If you kill us, Nightshade will find you. She'll avenge us.
No! Father!
Pataga, you are the new Moon Chief.
So, you are mine again, Nightshade. I had no idea you'd grown up into such a beautiful woman.
Why did you order me brought back here, Theron? What is it you've done to anger the gods so much that they've abandoned us?
Don't ever ask me that again. Do you understand?
Hail Cloud.
Yes, my chief?
How many warriors survived Badger Tail's attack?
He left us about 100. If you're thinking of returning his attack, don't. We can't.
How many warriors survived at Hickory Mounds and the other villages Badger Tail has ravaged this cycle?
Well, it might work, my chief, if we can convince their people to fight with little food in their bellies.
Pataga is massing forces, war leader. He has already gleaned over 900 from the southern villages.
We must stop Pataga now.
All right, but first, before you attack Pataga, I want you to strike Redweed Village and bring me the stone wolf that resides there.
But my chief...
I want that stone wolf! You will attack Redweed Village and get it!
Nightshade, tell me how to stop the killing. Can you?
No.
If you can't, who can?
A woman whom Wanderer is teaching. I don't know her name, but she's powerful. More powerful than I am.
Foe, grab Blacken! We have to try to get out through the window!
But they'll be watching! You know they will! They're probably waiting!
Bull!
Mother! Where's my mother?
I can run!
What happened?
Run! We'll find you if we can!
Locust, what have you discovered?
About the stone wolf? Nothing.
Wanderer.
Badger Tail, it's been a long time.
Tell me where the wolf is.
No.
Why?
The wolf is a very great power object, but I will tell Nightshade.
Birdman, 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 help me stay awake. I have to wait for Wanderer or my mother.
I hear you, little one.
Oh, Birdman, thank you.
Do you know why owls die with their wings outspread, little one?
They know that flight is their only hope of survival.
Will you give up, Lycan? Or will you fly for your people?
I want to fly, Birdman. I've always wanted to. Birdman, no! You're supposed to be my spirit helper!
Against the stunning backdrop of one of the greatest cities of the ancient world unfolds an epic tale of madness and revenge, of passion and redemption. Don't miss the next exciting installment of the North America's Forgotten Past series, People of the River, in rich, vibrant, graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.